Chapter 14. Jessica huddled in the corner, wrapping her arms around her knees and trying to shrink into the shadows. She had always been good at that. There were many shadows in Corvain, and it paid to know how to shrink into them, to merge with them, to avoid being seen, to avoid being heard. Jessica was hardly alone in this. A signal attribute of all the Citadel's menial class was its capacity to dissolve into nothing, to be unnoticeable, to blend into the background like one of the time-worn mottos carved into the lines of steel panels. They went with their heads lowered, with their hands clasped, with their feet pressed softly against the stone. Jessica, however, was particularly good at it. She was tiny, a waif of a girl, with limbs that looked so thin they might snap under a finger's pressure. She was like a breath of wind, her mother had told her. Like a gust of hot, silt-pocked air from the outside, caught for a moment under the yellow glare of a lumen, before sliding out again towards throne only knew where. It was not that the regime in Corvain was particularly onerous. There was no outright cruelty from the superiors, at least not the abuse that Tale said was rife across many other closed imperial institutions. But all of them knew, to some degree or other, the clandestine nature of what went on in the cells and hidden chambers. It did not pay to hear too much, just in case a stray secret might creep out from under a locked door and attach itself to you. There was always work to do, supplies to carry, surfaces to wash with the caustic blocks of antisep, errands to run for the lords of the upper tower, and that made it easier to clear one's mind of uncomfortable thoughts. At the close of each dark, cloistered day, there was gruel and synth lactose, and tubs of water to wash in, and hard cots free of lice. And that was a good and fortuitous thing, so best not to ruin it by paying too much attention or being noticed. Of course, Jessica had been noticed now by the new interrogator. She remained in awe of her, in truth. Her armour, her bearing, her speech. She must be infinitely wise, must Spinoza, and infinitely powerful, perhaps only a little less so than the Lord Kral himself. They had not spoken together for a long time, but Jessica still remembered the single piece of fruit she had been given, and the way it had burst across her chapped lips, and the juice that had trickled into her mouth, and the secret pact that had been sealed. In return, she had only been able to give her tiny snippets, things that most people in the Citadel already knew, but she had done as she had been bid, and kept her eyes open. One day she knew she would see something truly important, and then she would creep up the levels to the cell where she had been given the fruit, knowing that she had a gift for her mistress now, one that would repay that past kindness. "Thank you, Jessica," Spinoza would say then, smiling at her, lifting up her chin with a finger. "You have done me a great service, and through me you have done the throne a great service. Well done." Perhaps this was the time, Jessica thought. Things had been strange for a while. There had been the running and the shouting and the orders coming down from Gerog's people all the time, making them scurry. It had felt as if everything was being made and then remade, and towards the end of it, the stormtroopers had rifled through the menials' living quarters, looking for anything out of place. They hadn't found anything, of course, for all were loyal in Corvain. But then there had been the bigger noises, the louder shouts, the booms that had made the walls echo and the floors shake. She had kept her head down then, even more than usual, hoping it would all pass over. It hadn't. More stormtroopers came, only those wore grey, not black. They burst into the dormitories, bringing with them the stink of smoke. They had blank helms and empty eye slits, and pulled the menials from their cots before throwing them onto the floor. Then they rummaged through the sheets and tore out the food processors and kicked in the lockers where they all stored their few private belongings. They didn't ask any questions. They didn't speak at all. They were rough and clubbed a few of the older menials with the ends of their lasguns to make them move. But that was the limit of their brutality. They seemed to be in a great hurry, wanting to sweep through the lower chambers before heading on up to do whatever they had come to the Citadel to do. Jessica watched them all the while. She did what they wanted and stayed small and on the edge, watching. She tried to remember the little things, how they moved, what they smelled like, who was in command, and if they could be identified by a particular mark or manner. It was hard to keep everything in her head as they were jostled and herded out of the dormitories and down into the big refectory, so she mouthed the facts to herself silently, over and over. Once the grey stormtroopers had gathered them all up in the main hall, most left, leaving just a few to watch over them all. Yasika saw adepts in that place as well, clad in their finer cowled robes. Some of these, after a little while, jumped up and rushed against the grey guards and tried to disarm them. The fighting was brutal and swift, with predictable results. Once it was over, the leader of the stormtroopers killed the instigators and left their bodies lying on the tiled floor. The rest of them, menial and adept alike, hunkered down. Some of them looked scared. A few looked resigned. Yasika merely observed, knowing that Lord Spinoza, by the time she arrived to sort all this out, would want to know the details. For a long time, it seemed, the noises of fighting felt very close by, as if there were entire riots going on in the corridors outside. Those gradually moved away, heading upwards, until the refectory was left in an awkward state of near silence. Menials coughed quietly. Adepts sat back against the walls, their eyes closed. Those who had been taken from sick beds moaned from time to time. After a while, it became hard to keep her eyes open. Some of the older ones lay down on the floor, trying to grab some rest. Yasika looked up, straight into the overhead lumens, determined to stay alert. As a result, it was possible that, of all of them there, she was the first to notice the narrow vents around the edge of the high ceiling, the ones that she had noticed from time to time in the past, but never paid much heed to, activate. She narrowed her eyes. This was interesting. They were only little things, circular nozzles with lenses that were spiraling open, but they were silent, and no one else had seen them. She smiled to herself. She was the only one. Perhaps this was part of Spinoza's plan. Or perhaps she would want to know when it happened, in which case Yasika would be the one to tell her. She began to feel strange, light-headed. The lumens overhead seemed brighter and hurt her eyes. It also seemed that, for as long as she stared at them, the nozzles were becoming hazier. She rubbed her eyes and looked away from them. Now it appeared others were doing similar things. In the far corner of the chamber, a woman suddenly bent over and retched. One of the adepts got to his feet shakily before tottering and falling over again. The guards became instantly jittery. One trained his weapon at the ceiling, while another started to clutch at his throat. Yasika smiled again. She was feeling terribly sick, something to do with the gruel ration she'd had earlier that day, no doubt, and was having great trouble focusing. But something was clearly happening. She clasped her hands together and concentrated on staying alert.
"She will want the details," she said to herself, willing the sickness to fade away by remembering how that fruit had tasted. "All the details, to do great service to her, to do great service to the throne."
They were still fighting. They were too stupid to stop, too brain-clamped and nerve-numb to anything but their neural jack-sparked orders. Hook found herself inordinately proud of them all. She had lived down here with them for a long time now, and they had been her companions for the entirety of that time. It had become hard to think of them as they were, sacks of vat-grown meat, hard-wired to slaved cortex implants, destined for a 5-year life of perpetually stacking, sorting and retrieving books they would never read, for clients they would never see. In principle, they had been delivered for use as identical models, given one of the lowest Mechanica service ratings, and deployed for a strict subset of monotonous tasks. In practice, Hook had found ways to make things more interesting. Some years ago, she had gained access to some of their basic machine spirit glyph patterns through the cogitator hub at the heart of her domain. Through a long process of tinkering and experimentation, there was little else to do when the Lords of the Citadel did not demand her expert services. She had found ways to make them a little more variegated. One of them had even been taught to smile at her when it was dragged out of its rest pit. That smile had been a toothless, black-gummed horror show, but at least it had been a vestige of something like humanity. And now they were fighting for her. They didn't know what they were doing or why they were doing it, but it was possible to imagine that they cared, and imagination was all that she really needed then. Of course, they were getting cut apart. Once the shock of their first assault had died away, the grey armoured interlopers had fought back well enough. They were initially heavily outnumbered and had to fall back to the archive's gilt-lined entrance to avoid being torn to pieces, but Hook's little army had no genuine weapons and no tactics other than the blanket order she had given them on auto-repeat in their tiny pseudo-minds. A few stray lasbolts must have flown into the sea of shelves at some point, setting alight the tinder dry leaves, so now the fighting took place under the wavering flicker of flames. If she'd had time, she would have shuffled over to the precious cases and activated the dry chemical douses, but that was already impossible. Her flesh puppet army was being driven back towards the central cogitator hub, sliced and burned now by disciplined strikes of Laz weaponry. Hook had lost contact with Corvain's main auger feed, and so had heard nothing over the mainline comms since this thing started. Lasbeams had scythed through one of her main synapse cables, making it hard to order the few servitors she could still direct. Her own sidearm was nearly out of power, and the flames were only getting stronger. She started to laugh. She clambered over one of her cogitator banks, hoisting her ragged skirts to clear a bulbous screed entry moor. She had a few shots left, and it would be good to end a few more of them before they got close enough to defile the data coils. It was as she did so that she heard it. A normal mortal might not have done, for the noise of combat in that echoing vault was significant, but then Hook had always been gifted in many perceptive and hard-to-quantify ways. A hiss, like a long outlet of breath, then another, overlapping and growing in strength, until it was a solid gush.
"No,"
she murmured, staring up at the distant ceiling, now part obscured by snags of smoke.
"No, not that."
More lasbeams crisscrossed the space overhead, sizzling into the ranks of leather-spined books and kindling more bonfires. She got angry. She had not been angry, properly angry, since she had woken up and found herself here, tied down and locked away, her mind half-functional and her limbs bound up with iron.
"Who ordered this?"
she shouted, flinging her arms around, whirling amid the crossfire as if she could pinpoint where and how and why.
"Who ordered this?"
The servitors were toppling now, and not from incoming shots. She saw one of the grey armoured invaders stumble, gagging, vomit bursting from the narrow slit at his neck. Her vision began to blur, like grease spread over a lens. She fell to her knees, buoyed only by her remaining synapse cables.
"I wanted to talk to him again," she mumbled, thrashing amid the wreck of her kingdom, trying to stay upright.
Now all she could hear was the whooshing of the vents.
"He said he'd be back, and we'd talk again."
She wanted to shout that out, but wasn't going to be able to do that now. She knew a terrifying amount about what would happen to her next, and how agonizing it would be. She toppled over. As she did so, she watched one of the servitors expire, its face as blank and expressionless as ever. Her iron fingers clawed at the floor. The flames fanned higher, making the parchment scraps crackle and fly.
"Who ordered this?"
she croaked, before her tongue stopped moving. Spinoza kept her hand on the plunger the whole time, as if by maintaining a physical link with it, she could somehow appreciate what was happening down below. She had kept her eyes open, staring at the cylinder of steel as it had slid smoothly into its sheath. The skulls arranged around the summit were a theatrical touch, and she hadn't been able to decide whether they were entirely crass or eminently suitable. An inquisitorial fortress was stuffed with skulls. They were the badge of the organization. They were virtually the badge of the Imperium. So strange to twist a symbol of abject mortality into one supposedly of institutional strength. What did that say about them as a species? When had they stopped noticing the irony of it? But now she sounded like Kral, whose lack of fortitude was so troubling. That would not do at all. One of them at least had to remain resolute, focused on the larger picture and not obsessed with the minutiae of this singular quest for answers of doubtful value. The conversation she had undertaken with Rivas before taking action remained stained on her mind, playing through it as if on auto-loop. They were all still clustered around her. Rivas, Khazad, the stormtrooper officers, Irunian. The arguments had been run through now, exhausted, and she had made her decision, just as she'd been trained to do.
The Corvus Ring is not primarily a physical barrier,
Rivas had told her.
It can hold an assault for a matter of hours, but its principal purpose is to maintain a molecular seal across the citadel, at the point where its diameter and functional arrangement make such an arrangement practical.
She had instantly understood the implications of that. There would be no point in creating such a seal unless the counterpart facility were also in place, the means to flood the levels below with chemical agents. She had not fully grasped the purpose of Rivas's preparations before that. They had seemed strangely ordered and unnecessary. Now she realized what he had been doing, among all his other duties, ensuring that the vents were in good working order, just in case.
The invaders have decent armor protection, Rivas had gone on, his voice almost a monotone. But it is not fully chem-sealed. Countermeasures will be effective.
As they had spoken, the grinding thrum of assault from below had grown. The enemy had brought up metal-boring machines, and the chamber's remote oculus feeds had filled with a blaze of turbo-drills. Spinoza had looked away from those pictures. How many of our people are still below the limiter? Rivas had looked her directly in the eye.
We pulled as many back as we could, he had said. That was the purpose of my strategy once it became clear what we were up against.
I did not ask you that. I asked you how many are still below the limiter.
A third of the Citadel's complement, mostly lower-grade menial staff, but significant numbers of mid-grade adepts, some of my detachment, prisoners, cell guards, the archivists.
The thrum had grown louder. She had heard shouted orders from the chamber next door as the station troops had prepared to defend it from attack.
There would also be significant collateral damage,
Rivas had intoned, sounding more and more like he was delivering a funeral oration.
Delivering the volume of nerve agent necessary to cleanse the citadel will result in leakage to the surrounding areas. Casualties there will be significant.
She had nodded. He had been commendably thorough. Perhaps unworthily, she had reflected then on what would have happened if she and Hegane had not rendezvoused with him when they had done. Would he have contemplated this still, knowing that she was on the wrong side of the barrier? Khazad had interjected then, her eyes live with indignation.
You cannot be making this, she had blurted, looking to her for support. We can fight here.
Rivas hadn't looked at her. He had looked at Spinoza the whole time, as if trying to assuage some sense of guilt that the order would now be given by her rather than him. At that point, the noise of the drills below had picked up. She remembered, wondering if they were already too late, and whether the bulkheads had been pierced. Still, she had not been able to press the plunger. She had resisted even putting her hand on it, knowing that once she did that, there would be no way back. A final question.
Any word from the Lord Crowell? She had asked.
Rivas had shaken his head. Now she stood, her hand still pressed on the metal. It had taken far less time than she might have imagined. The tubes must have threaded down through the inhabited levels like veins, chamber after chamber, protruding just a little from the crannies and the corners, almost unnoticeable. Such a system would have been hard to retrofit, surely. Corvain must always have had it, she guessed, baked into its atrophying structure by its long-dead designers, a product of an age of paranoia and insecurity. Perhaps it had been used many times over the centuries. Perhaps this was the first time. Perhaps there had been souls who had deployed it and felt nothing. Perhaps others had been haunted by their decision forever. She remembered her last conversation with Hook.
This place is disordered. You were a savant. You should fix it.
Slowly, she withdrew her gauntlet. Khazad was glaring at her. Hegane, seemingly, could not meet her gaze. The chamber's pictolenses showed the devastation below. The assault on the bastion had halted. Two tracked drill machines lay immobile, their crews slumped around them. Other lenses were cycling through images from further down, silent halls crammed with bodies. Empty corridors strewn with wreckage, automatic machinery ticking over in the shadows, as if nothing had ever happened to threaten it. The tactical displays, which had been filled with signals, were now black and empty. "How long before we can get back down there?" she asked, her voice sounding hollow in her ears.
"Volumes are already dissipating," Rivas reported,
going over to an auger terminal to monitor levels.
"A few hours, suitably protected."
She felt cold, as if carved from the stone of the walls around her. "Enemy aircraft still active?"
"Some. I have given orders for the turret gunners to target them."
"Good." She withdrew from the control column, once more feeling the weight of her unfamiliar armor on her shoulders. "I will return to my chambers now. Do not disturb me unless necessary." She paused at the doorway, resting her gauntlet against the fluted granite. She felt nauseous, and the feeling would only grow. "But notify me as soon as the Lord Kral returns. He will wish to be briefed on what has taken place, I am sure, in person." Rivas watched her go. He had not yet had a chance to tell her what had caused the security breach. That would have to be done sometime soon. All would have to be disclosed. For now, though, he was still needed. He had orders to give, arrangements to make, timetables to establish. Every indication was that the chemicals had done their work and that the Citadel was now secured.
"A third of the Citadel's complement."
As he had spoken those words, he had felt the guilt stab at him like knives. He had served Kral for a long time and knew many of those stranded, by sight at least. Some of his own troops hadn't made it, and their deaths were added to the tally of those his mistake had condemned. He pushed such thoughts out of his mind, striding out of the command chamber and back into the hall, where most of those remaining under his command had been gathered. The portal leading to the levels below was still tightly shut, its shimmer of shielding still in place. A team of adepts in biohazard suits was making its way down the central aisle towards the control mechanism, poised to be the first through the gap once the all-clear was given. For now, though, the warning panels were still pulsing red, forbidding passage beyond the Corvus ring. He went through his remaining tasks methodically, placing them in order of priority, not moving on until each was completed. He travelled to the control chambers for the exterior gun emplacements, and watched as the last of the enemy's lingering attack craft were either brought down or driven off. He briefed the reclamation teams on their priorities, once transit beyond the ring could be established, flush all confined spaces, install test devices at all intersections, set up anti-tox stations wherever readings remained high, and summon the biohazard teams. Once access had been restored, it would be essential to clear the corpses quickly and get them incinerated, lest infection spread through the air filtration network. Counter-septic programs would have to be rigorous and rapid. The adepts, even those used to working in the scriptoria and the signals units, would have to get involved. The hangars and main ground-level portals would have to be reclaimed and sealed to prevent ingress while they were so weak. Some kind of guard would have to be set up. The list of tasks was almost endless.
"A third of the Citadel's complement."
He didn't so much as catch an idle breath for the next few hours. The painful process of establishing control absorbed him completely. When fatigue crept up, a reminder that he had been on his feet and fighting for a very long time, he treated it as just admonishment for his failings and redoubled his efforts. His duties only took him to the Medicaid bay once. Irunian had already made his way up there and was busy preparing his own teams for reinsertion below. His slabs were fully occupied, enemy corpses most betraying catastrophic battle wounds, a couple showing evidence of selective excruciation. Clearly, some effort to counter the mind wipe had been undertaken. The few survivors were corralled in a secure unit. They were looking shell-shocked, sitting under the glare of white lumens, saying nothing.
"You have what you need?" Rivas asked him.
Irunian nodded.
"Captain, I..."
he started, looking thoroughly miserable.
"It was my order, Chirurgeon," Rivas said heavily. "My order. I'll tell Kral."
He rolled his shoulders, trying to fend the exhaustion off a little longer.
"Keep a few alive for interrogation and accelerate the cleanup. I want teams back across the boundary within the hour."
Irunian hesitated, looking as if he wanted to say something more. Perhaps it was guilt with him, too. Or maybe just fear.
By your will,
was all he offered eventually, before shambling back to his bloody slabs. After that, Reavers found himself alone again, heading back towards his private cell. His comm feed was still jammed with incoming messages. Nothing had come in yet from Kral. As soon as they were back on their feet, something would have to be done about that. A squad sent out, perhaps. Then again, the entire world seemed to be in almost open revolt. It might not be possible to arrange anything before the hangars were cleared. He reached the corridor leading to his cell. The lights were out, making the already dark stone look like the void itself. A figure was waiting for him. As soon as he recognized Khazad, he felt just a fraction better.
Assassin, he said, walking up to her, you should be resting.
She darted a quick look at him, though it was hard to make out her expression in the dark.
Cannot rest.
You should try, though. We have only won a temporary reprieve.
She smiled.
We'll be back. I told you this.
I know.
He was close to her now.
I should say, you fought well.
Her face clarified a little in the glow of his armor lumens. He saw then that her smile was not mirthful, but bitter.
Fight well, she said sourly. I ask it, how can you live with yourself?
That took him aback.
What do you...
Too quick, Captain. Too quick to retreat.
He stiffened.
It was an army. We would have lost the citadel.
Not honorable.
It was war.
War? Who against, really? See who has died now.
And then she turned away, limping back down the narrow corridor. Reavers watched her go, half wanting to follow, half too surprised to move. Then he turned, slowly, and took the access wafer from his belt. He slotted it into the door mechanism, and it slid open to reveal his bare chamber beyond. Treading heavily, he made it to his hard cot and collapsed onto it. He looked up at the whitewashed ceiling, where mold speckles clustered around the ventilation housing. His comm bead pulsed. It pulsed again.
A third of the Citadel's complement.
Silently, wearily, he closed his eyes.